Hi everybody, this is Joey Hernandez, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 52. B&H vows to fight and clear its name. In this episode, retail giant B&H Photo Video isn't lying down, new faster SD cards are on the horizon, a photojournalist gets introduced to the concrete by the Secret Service, Nikon recalls the D750 yet again, and Tether Tools has a new product designed to keep the power flowing. All that and more in episode 52 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Joey, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it. Joey Hernandez, or Francisco Joel Hernandez, as he's known online, is an up-and-coming portrait and wedding photographer based out of South Texas in the Rio Grande Valley, and his work is stunning. Francisco, that's fun to say. People are dying right now. That was an Elf reference, by the way. If you haven't seen it yet, it's a great movie. If you follow the Petapixel mothership over at petapixel.com, you may recall a post about him just recently. Francisco is a regular in the 39,000-plus strong Strobus group over on Facebook, and is known not only for his beautiful portraiture, but his hilarious behind-the-scenes photos, where he not only details what he used to get the shot, but labels items sure to make you laugh and bring a smile to your face. He's an incredible young man, and I want you to check out his work. To do that, head on over to fjhphoto.com. And I'd like to thank you for joining us here in episode 52 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we greatly appreciate you telling your friends and helping to spread the word about this podcast. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. If you listened to episode 51, you heard our lead story about the U.S. government's allegations that photography retailing giant B&H Photo Video discriminated against employees at its Brooklyn Navy Yard warehouse. Allegations that B&H calls, quote, inaccurate and bizarre, end quote. Now, initially, B&H chose not to comment to the media, but on Sunday, February 28, 2016, the company released a public statement about the government's lawsuit and offered up a defense. It's a pretty lengthy statement, and I'm not going to read it all right here, right now, but I think that given B&H's prominence in the industry and the seriousness of these allegations, their statement needs to be heard. So if you want to hear that, I'm going to put that at the very end of this show, so make sure you stay tuned for that. In the meantime, let's briefly go over the allegations for those of you who haven't heard episode 51 just yet and break it down. In late February 2016, the U.S. government dropped a bomb alleging that B&H exclusively hired Hispanic men into its entry-level positions there, promoted and compensated them at significantly lower rates, failed to keep required employment records, directed Hispanic warehouse workers to use separate, unsanitary, and sometimes inoperable restrooms from everyone else, and failed to provide designated restrooms and changing facilities for females. All very serious charges, of course. Charges that B&H vehemently denies and is vowing to fight to disprove, as its reputation here is on the line. The retail giant isn't rolling over, and in its statement says in part, quote, the allegations you've been hearing about are largely made by people who have never set foot in a B&H facility. We can declare outright that B&H does not have any segregated bathrooms by race or religion, and anyone working at B&H knows that to be true. Additionally, any similar contention are not only inaccurate, but bizarre. End quote. Like I said, we'll have B&H's full statement at the end of this podcast, so make sure you stick around for that. You want to hear everything that they have to say about this. A B&H spokesperson tells us at Petapixel, quote, the truth of the matter is these are trumped-up allegations. It is true that I have 18 years with B&H, but I have not witnessed any of these allegations. I wouldn't work for an outfit like it is being portrayed. The segregated bathrooms is a complete and utter lie, and it makes for good press, so it's being tossed around. End quote. Now, either these things are true or they're not, right? Either the government has photos, witness statements, etc. about this, or they don't. And that's all going to be hammered out going forward. If you interview the workers and they say that this isn't true, then maybe, just maybe, it's not true, right? Where are these alleged segregated bathrooms? You know, a lot is on the line here. Not just the $46 million contract from the U.S. government, but the company's reputation, one that they've built over decades. I mean, how many of us have ordered from them? Just about all of us. So let's assume for a second that these allegations are untrue. You know, we've seen people online vowing to never shop with B&H again. And if you're a company and you know these things to be untrue, that is unbelievably unfortunate. That's an instant hit to the bottom line, a hit that may be hard to recover from. And if it's not true, that is so unfair. On Petapixel, one of our readers who claims to work for B&H had this to say, quote, "I was trying to stay out of this discussion, but I felt I needed to speak up for the truth. Even though this is written by BH employee, I will add my two objective cents. First of all, I've been an employee of the company for many years. I am what Americans call a minority. I did not apply to BH. BH came looking for me. I was studying in upstate New York, and they wanted to offer me a position. Ever since, I have never felt discriminated against. They've always given me lots of support, the managers that I've had the pleasure to work with. I've never felt like a second place employee versus the Hasidic employees. The owner has always been very friendly towards me. The owner not only talks to me, but asks me about my life, family, and my hobbies. Yes, no company is perfect, but I've seen this company change and gotten better and better. The company has always been extremely generous with us. Even during the tough economic times, they've always given us raises. They even gave us a bonus during a slow year. It saddens me that the company is getting a bad rap. Again, no company, even Apple, is perfect. I am not a mouthpiece for the company. It did not ask me to write this. I strongly felt that some of the erroneous accusations had to be addressed." End quote. Listen, I'm not there at the B&H warehouse, so I can't speak to what is and what is not happening there now, nor in the past. But those in the industry who know these folks at B&H best are scratching their heads because this just isn't the B&H that they know. Not even close. What's really disturbing to me, though, is that all the anti-Semites are out there in full force spreading their hatred now. You know, it's 2016, and I guess we just haven't made nearly as much progress as we thought. So that's disappointing. Another humanity fail. B&H gave noted photographer Katrine Eisman unfettered access to their warehouse, and for nearly 2 hours, she roamed around documenting what she saw. She's posted those photos over on her Facebook account, and along with the gallery says, quote, "Here is what I found, and better said, did not find. Segregated and non-functioning bathrooms, hazardous working environment, and lack of diversity. I found the same quality and cleanliness of bathrooms that customers use, with the same exact tiles, locker rooms, break rooms with free coffee, little jealous, and complete diversity of employees taking breaks at the same time, free English classes, and a number of notices about vacation and holiday schedules. Please note, I am not an OSHA inspector or a reporter, but for those of you that have said that they will never shop at B&H again due to these allegations, you can go back. FYI, I hope to visit the Brooklyn warehouses completely unannounced in the coming weeks." End quote. Now, to be fair again, the allegations were from a January 2011 to January 2013 review period, and here we are now in March of 2013 as I record this. So, a little over 3 years, and a lot can change in that time. That said, when this is fully investigated and interviews of employees, etc., are conducted, employees who worked for B&H during that time period will either be able to confirm the allegations or completely obliterate them. And B&H is pretty confident in the latter. Now, of course, if there's anything new with this story, we'll update you guys. And don't forget to check out their full statement at the end of this podcast. In the past year or so, we've seen so many cameras of one flavor or another, which can shoot 3D, 360-degree video, and now 8K, unbelievably. Those all demand higher throughput, of course, and yeah, your standard SD card that you have now can't hack it. The SD Association has announced its latest SD memory card specification called SD 5.0, and it features the fastest speed class thus far, what's called video speed class. These cards will be able to handle 4K, 8K, and 3D, as well as 360-degree video recording. And needless to say, but apparently I'm going to mention it anyhow, these new cards are easily going to be able to handle the photos that you throw at it, no matter how many megapixels you're shooting, and at top speeds. No doubt about it. Easily. Now, when they're out, you'll know the difference between these cards and the current ones by the goofy stylized V that they have on them, along with the number that they have to the right of it. A V with the 90 to the right signifies the new video speed class, and that it can handle 90 megabytes per second write speed. In addition, the specification will also allow for the simultaneous interleaving of 8 files, which is going to come in handy with applications like 360-degree video, where you've got multiple files which all need to be written to the card at the same time and without choking. You know, 8K is just a few years away, amazingly, but we're going to be seeing a 6K camera from Panasonic by the end of this year, 2016, and YouTube has announced that it has already been able to host 8K video since back in June of 2015. Now, while there's no word on when we're going to see these SD 5.0 cards, one thing that we do know is that they're going to be expensive. That's just a given, right? These things are going to be really, really pricey. And while you're at it, you're also going to need ginormous capacity hard drives for all that video, redundant hard drives to back them up, computers with the fastest processors possible, and all of that just to keep up with it. Yeah, maybe it's just better to stick with stills, huh? Next. The Nikon D750 is amazing. Amazing because it's not only a very great, very capable camera, but it's also been plagued with a number of issues from the start. This time, though, it's a familiar issue and one we thought that was taken care of many months ago. The company has announced that it's expanding its recall of the D750 over a shutter-related issue that's caused lens flare to show up in photos under certain circumstances. Now, this is a problem which dates way back to December of 2014, so well over a year and a few months as I record this. A problem which caused Nikon to quietly pull the D750 from stores around the world, then later it confirmed that there was indeed a problem, and that it would be taking care of that by making repairs on cameras that it had produced from October to November of 2014. Cameras which had been made but weren't yet sold, as well as cameras in the hands of customers, would get repaired and a black dot would be placed in the tripod socket, signifying that the repair had been made. Now, we all thought we'd get a painted black dot from the looks of the photo on Nikon's site, but in reality, it was just done with a black marker like a Sharpie. So customers buying cameras on eBay or wherever couldn't be very confident that they were actually getting a camera that had been repaired or not. So now the camera maker is issuing another service advisory, announcing that the recall is being expanded to include D750 bodies made between December 2014 and June of 2015. Okay, so basically every D750 made since they were released until June 2015. That just doesn't instill very much confidence in Nikon, does it? The unfortunate thing is that the D750 is a wonderful camera. I used to own one, in fact. I picked it as DSLR of the Year for 2014, and that was in spite of knowing about this light leak issue. That is how great of a camera it is, and I still believe that. This light leak issue, by the way, which few seem to be able to make happen, try though they might, needs to be taken care of once and for all. It's a bit distressing that Nikon couldn't manage to solve this problem back in January 2015 when they did that silent recall and gave everyone a black dot. Now, if you'd like to see if your camera is affected by this, head on over to the show notes for episode 52 at petapixel.com/podcast, and we'll link you over to Nikon's technical service advisory page where you can plug in your serial number and see what comes up. What a pain in the butt. I mean, it makes you wonder what the heck is going on over at Nikon that they didn't solve this problem the first time around. Of this issue, Nikon says, quote, "If your D750 camera may be affected, as confirmed with the serial number checker above, you will be provided with the necessary information to obtain service for this issue free of charge. Once your D750 camera is received by Nikon, your D750 camera shutter will be examined and replaced, and your D750 camera returned to you free of charge, even if your D750 camera warranty has expired. We sincerely apologize for any inconvenience this matter may have caused you. End quote. Boy, they said D750 camera like a billion times in that, didn't they? Hey, I've been known to repeat myself once or twice. It happens. Now, a listener contacted me on Facebook asking for advice, and I told him that right now would be a really bad time to send in his D750 because everyone else is going to panic and send theirs in right now. So give it a month or so and then send it in. Otherwise, you could be waiting, who knows, 2, 3, 4 weeks to get it back. And that brings up an important point here. If you need your D750 because it's your soul body and without it you can't make money, you can't exactly afford to be without it for that long, can you? So what do you do? I guess if you're a Nikon Professional Services member, it might be worth it to see if you can get a loaner body, but who knows how many of those they have available. Now, if you're a wedding shooter, of course, you need to have 2 working bodies minimum. Because if something goes wrong and you've only got the one body at the time because the other one is off at Nikon being repaired, you're out of luck. You could get sued by the bride and groom. I mean, at very least, you can't shoot photos of an event that's already happened and you didn't have a camera to shoot it with because your other one went down. This is the position that, once again, Nikon puts its customers in, and it's frustrating. You know, the first recall, that can be excused. It shouldn't have happened, but it did. You know, we moved on. Oh, but then another recall, and not one for a new problem, one for the very same issue that Nikon was supposed to have fixed a long time ago. That is just hard to excuse right there. So don't be surprised if you see a class action suit against Nikon over this. You know, the D750 hasn't achieved lemon status, but it's kind of lemony or lemon-ish. I don't know. It keeps having problems. You get the point here. Get it together, Nikon. You're not new at this camera making thing. You've been doing it for many decades now, and others lately have been eating your lunch. You really can't afford to be slipping up like this, can you? So it's time to step up your game. That all said, despite all these problems, I have no problems recommending the D750. It's a wonderful camera. And if you're not seeing this light leak issue, you may never see it. You could try to make it happen and it still wouldn't happen. But at some point, if you have a few weeks that you're not going to be shooting, you might as well send it in, get that black dot, get it fixed, and call it good, especially if you plan on reselling it someday. You know, I've got high hopes for that Nikon D500, but if it gets recalled, that's it. I'm sending it to Canada. Next. The U.S. Secret Service does not play. Trust me on this. I covered Senator John McCain's tour of Arizona's largest wildfire back in 2011, and during a press conference, an agent gave me all 15 seconds to photograph the senator from maybe 10 feet away before strongly urging me to move. But that experience was a breeze compared to what veteran Time photojournalist Christopher Morris dealt with on Monday, February 29, 2016, while covering presidential candidate Donald Trump in Radford, Virginia. Morris has been doing this a long time. You know, he's been around the block. But things got completely out of hand that day. The veteran photojournalist said F you to the agent. Well, he used the actual word, of course, but we're trying to keep our clean rating here on the podcast, as you know. And a moment later, he was grabbed by the throat and slammed to the ground. Like I said, the Secret Service does not play. If someone is hostile, escalating a situation, and is seen as a potential threat to the candidate or the security detail, that threat gets removed. And sometimes that means you are quickly introduced to the concrete below. Early reports focused on Morris putting his hands around the agent's neck because there was video of that after getting back up on his feet, but he says he was assaulted first and never hit the agent. He claims he stepped about a foot and a half out of the press pen before he was confronted and then slammed to the ground. For those that don't know, candidate Trump has been herding the press into designated areas, something that is not usual, and often ridicules them during his stump speeches. This arrangement, though, is outside of the norm because traditionally, credentialed members of the press, photojournalists, are often given freedom of movement to go wherever they need to go to exercise their First Amendment rights and freedom of the press. As you may suspect, this has set off quite the firestorm, and everyone seems to have something to say about this. National Press Photographers Association President Melissa Little issued a statement saying, quote, We assert that the function of the Secret Service at these events is to provide security and de-escalate confrontational situations, not create them. It is apparent from various videos of the incident that the agent involved violently threw Mr. Morris to the ground while holding him around the neck. If indeed all Mr. Morris was attempting to do was step outside of the press pen to photograph a newsworthy event happening at the rear of the room, the agent clearly overreacted. End quote. You know, that goes without saying, right? He was a member of the press and not a threat. Morris was merely reacting to protesters and trying to cover that, something that required changing his position from the press pen that they were in. Now, Morris issued a statement saying, quote, "The rules at Trump events are significantly stricter than the other campaigns and make it very difficult to work as a photographer, as many others have pointed out before me. I regret my role in the confrontation, but the agent's response was disproportionate and unnecessarily violent. I hope this incident helps call attention to the challenges of press access." End quote. Now, the Secret Service says that it's working with local law enforcement there in Virginia to determine what happened and what action, if any, needs to be taken. Many are calling for this agent to be fired. I don't know if that's necessarily needed. Maybe retraining would be okay. You know, you got to be somewhat reasonable, even though this was a very unreasonable act. I think he probably regrets it himself. Personally, I agree with Morris on this. Even as rude as he was to the agent, slamming him to the ground wasn't the right course of action, and I think we would all agree with that. The bigger issue here, like he said, is press access. You know, candidate Trump hurting the press just isn't cool. If he becomes president, it'll be interesting to see what kind of access the press gets and how many get introduced to the concrete. Next. These days, so many of us are tearing through batteries like there's no tomorrow as we use our otherwise digital still cameras for video. And if you shoot mirrorless, especially Sony bodies, you probably own a handful of extra batteries just so you can keep on shooting. Sad but true. And I'm a Sony owner myself. I know this firsthand. Well, Tether Tools has a solution which it says is the world's first system that lets you provide uninterruptible power for a DSLR or mirrorless camera using a standard 5-volt battery pack or wall outlet. The company says its case relay product, quote, "provides for the first time ever a hot swappable uninterrupted power source for most DSLR and mirrorless cameras on the market today. Stopping video or photo production to remove cameras from stands to change batteries is a challenge of the past." End quote. Now, the case relay is a small box that sits between the company's relay camera coupler in your camera's battery compartment and your external battery pack. Since the case relay itself can hold a 1200 milliamp hour charge, you can keep your camera constantly ready to shoot while simply changing the battery packs on the other end. Now, if you didn't have one of these, you could connect your camera to an external battery, lipstick charger, etc., like the kind from Anker and other companies out there. But when it was drained, game over. With Case Relay, though, it's getting charged constantly from that external battery. So when that battery is spent, you just detach it from the Case Relay, and that's still providing power to your camera. And then you just connect another battery to it. And I think that's brilliant. Now, I know a bunch of shooters who are going to go get one of these without even having to think about it. You know, it's a done deal. The unit is compatible with a large number of Canon, Nikon, Sony, and Panasonic DSLRs and mirrorless bodies, and the relay camera coupler, the battery-shaped replacement for your current camera battery, will go for about $30 to $35 US, depending on the camera model. A wire then comes out of that and goes into the case relay, and then that connects to your external battery of choice or a wall outlet. Of this product, Tether Tools founder Josh Simmons says, quote, "The case relay power system is perfect for time-lapse photography, photo booths, video production, power-hungry live view shooting, or any long day on the set. To a photographer or filmmaker, case relay means you will never run out of power, and you won't need to stress about remembering to change and bring extra camera batteries on every shoot." End quote. If you're interested in this product, you can pick one up right now over at the Tether Tools website for about $100 US. But remember, you're also going to need that other adapter for your camera, the one that goes inside your camera that looks like the battery with a cord hanging out of it, and at least one external battery or a nearby wall outlet. Australian-based Atomos contacted us at Petapixel to point out that their Power Station product, quote, has been around for approximately 2 years and was the first hot-swappable, uninterrupted power source for DSLRs and mirrorless cameras, end quote. And indeed, that is true. But the Power Station is also $395 US, whereas the case relay system is significantly less expensive. Okay, for those of you who stuck it out and wish to hear the entire statement that B&H put out on Sunday, February 28, 2016, here's what the company had to say. Quote, "Dear customer, we appreciate your concern and your loyalty and want to take this time to help you understand what has been happening recently. At B&H, we value each and every customer. Your concern is our concern. And we know you have choices when shopping, and your choice of our establishment is something we do not and must not take lightly. We want to continue earning your business and instilling pride in your choice for photo and electronics. B&H is a family-owned business, a success that has been built over 40 years from a small storefront in New York City to the worldwide enterprise we are today. This is credit to our dedicated and devoted employees, many of whom have been with our company for decades. Every one of our employees is treated with respect and dignity, no matter of race, religion, or gender. The average employee tenure at B&H far exceeds most of our competitors, and as well as most employers of any kind. Our employees are well compensated, offered generous benefits, and they are given 17 paid days off in addition to 3 weeks paid vacation. Few companies offer this. The allegations you've been hearing about are largely made by people who have never set foot in a B&H facility. For the time being, we will address several of the accusations as they are far from factual. We can declare outright that B&H does not have segregated bathrooms by race or religion, and anyone working at B&H knows that to be true. Additionally, any similar contentions are not only inaccurate, but bizarre. There are always areas where we can better ourselves, and these are issues that B&H is committed to strengthening as we move forward. Our goal is to create an even friendlier environment for our employees where there can be no doubt that their needs, concerns, and well-being are noticeably our primary focus. Our roots are from a place where discrimination affected so many of the very people who are now part of the B&H family, and we built this company and brand to defy what were the norms around us, and to give everyone the chance to succeed, to care for their families and homes, and to be happy. That will not change, but will only be improved upon. What you may not be told in these scurrilous narratives is that B&H chose to keep its jobs in New York rather than opting, as so many others do, to outsource jobs to areas overseas where labor rates are lower. Our call centers and online management teams are right here. We chose a very different route, and we continue to make daily decisions taking into account, first and foremost, our dedicated employees and customers, and we will continue to do so. Over the next few weeks and months, you will hear more and see the growth, and we will make sure our customer and our employee are kept keenly aware of the situation. Please feel free to reach to us with any of your concerns, and we hope that we can continue to earn your business in the future." End quote. So there's their statement, and like I said, if there's anything new that develops, we'll make sure to let you guys know right here. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 52 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. Also, head on over to the Petapixel Mothership and see the new redesign, something that's been in the works for a while now. I think you guys are going to like it. It's very mobile friendly and the website is really cool. And don't forget, if you want to leave us a voicemail question for us to answer here on the show, head on over there and use the voicemail widget. But if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. I'd love to hear from you. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 53. Well, it's f/8 2/50 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.